Up next, we're going to move into our IRA project updates. Ms. Bachman.
Great.
And I believe Dr. Feeney will be helping you as well.
Yes, I've got a number of folks that are on tap to help.
Oh, apparently there's a whole slew of council staff helping out here. Great job. Thank you.
Yeah, well, while Sherry's pulling up the presentation, thanks for the opportunity to update you. Our idea with this agenda item is to be comprehensive in sharing just a snapshot of where we are with the various Inflation Reduction Act projects that we have underway. Some of these updates are a little more detailed, some are a little higher level. Most of the staff contributed in some way, shape, or form to, you know, either participating in the projects or providing updates for these slides, for the briefing materials. So in addition to the slides, we've got some information that was provided to you. We've got updated project briefs. Those are kind of one-pagers that are giving you a snapshot of project objectives, kind of where we're at in the timeline, what's been accomplished, what's coming next, what we hope the council's eventual outcomes are going to be, and who's involved from a kind of staff and contractor and a kind of outside expertise standpoint. Also put together this month a synopsis of our governance project updates, and that's an East Coast collaborative effort. That's work that we're doing funded by our IRA as well as the Mid-Atlantic and South Atlantic, and we're working with the commission on that through the efforts of the East Coast Coordination Group. So there's that short document, and then there's also a list of kind of various workshops and other types of meetings that we are looking at, mostly in 2026, and some of those will roll into 2027 as well. And so if you want to get a sense of kind of meeting type activities that are occurring up and down the East Coast, that would be a good place to look. Oops, this is like a little touchy.
Just a little delay.
Okay, I think I hit the button too hard. So we do have some deeper dive updates on some of these projects planned for April, and we can kind of let you know when we get to those. So we're not aiming to give you all the details for all of these at this point. And in general, we're kind of, I think with these IRA projects, we're trying to balance kind of needing to ask for too much detailed input or feedback from the council. I think there are points where we will want that, and certainly as we near the end of these projects and we have results to share that are going to be applied to your management decisions, we're going to spend more time explaining those results and providing kind of reports and making sure that you understand what was done so that you can then kind of move it into management decision making. So taking like the ABC control rule project that Dr. Kerr is going to talk about as an example, we want to make sure that as we near the end of that project, you understand the work that was done and how it connects with the risk policy work so that you can then apply it to decision making in groundfish and eventually other fisheries. For now, we're leaving a lot of the, you know, like detailed decisions about these projects within the project teams. But if you have questions, I think you can certainly get in touch with me at any point. And then the staff leads that are identified on these slides are also a good source of information. So you'll hear about this project from Dr. Kerr after we give the staff presentation, but the team has been working actively on this. It's highly interconnected with the work of the Risk Policy Working Group, and so the slides that Lisa will be presenting are dovetail and are designed to pair with the outcomes of that working group meeting. So she will give you some updates later. Wanted to update you a little bit on this IRA 2 project around groundfish management transition. Robin Friede is the lead on this project, and we have some other team members as well, as you can see in the brief. I think folks are probably aware that the funding proposal that Dr. O'Keefe prepared a couple years ago now identified a focus for this project of the Atlantic Cod Complex, moving from a two-stock system to a four-stock system and wanting to think about management strategies. And we really wanted this to be developing management approaches kind of outside of the context of a typical council meeting, and doing that work, beginning to brainstorm those opportunities in kind of a different setting, a facilitated setting, so that vision for the how the project would work is still the same, but we're thinking it's would be better to broaden the scope of the project just to include the groundfish fishery more broadly, just given kind of the status of the COD management action and needing to move forward with beginning to plan these meetings and doing this contracting before the end of our IRA funding period. So the staff have talked about this at some length, and we think the best approach is really to broaden this to groundfish management transition needs more broadly. So that could include things like adjustments to the sector management system. It could include things like spatial management measures, maybe a spawning protection measures that are intended to promote conservation of groundfish resources. But that's kind of where we're at. We haven't wanted to check in with the council briefly on this and just kind of take the pulse and make sure that you're okay with revising the scope and expanding the scope a little bit. As we kind of move through the year, we'll draft up a request for proposals and identify some facilitator, one or more people that are able to kind of do a good job for us of helping to coordinate these meetings and get this feedback that we're looking for. We do plan to interface with the Groundfish Committee as this work is underway, as our expertise kind of within the council body. So that's kind of where we're at with this. So as I'm continuing to talk, you can think about your level of comfort with this revision. But that's where this project is at. Another initiative we have is sort of in three parts, and it's around integrating ecosystem information. So we have this kind of broader umbrella project that's really staff directed. We have another project about dynamic reference points, and we have a third project about ecosystem component species. And so this one, 3.1, is something that Andy's been doing a lot of the work on. Really our purpose here is to continue to move forward ecosystem approaches that we've been discussing for quite a long time, and being really explicit about climate drivers and how, you know, kind of dynamic changes in the marine environment and, you know, as a result in our fish stocks that we're managing and our fishery systems kind of may be affecting the choices we're making going forward. So there's a bunch of different objectives underneath this. All are things that we're currently kind of in process simultaneously. Part of this is doing the factor development scoring for the council's risk policy and making sure we have the information that will feed into that. Also, looking at, you know, specific opportunities to integrate either existing or new sources of data into decisions and having clear pathways for that. That's something that's being developed through the Climate Ecosystem Steering Committee. And then also thinking about how we're presenting information to you in terms of reporting on kind of the status of fisheries and kind of information provided. You know, we do that currently in slightly different ways across FMPs. So Mr. Applegate provided you a prototype back at the December meeting, and we're continuing to move that work forward. And I think later in the talk, Angelia is going to give some information about how we're trying to roll that all together at the staff level. So this is pretty exciting work, I think. We have, I think, made a pretty good amount of progress in the last couple of months since the council last met on planning this dynamic reference points workshop for the Scientific and Statistical Committee. We've hired three individuals who will be working with us as contractors to help facilitate and then generate a, you know, really detailed technical report that it's going to help serve as a roadmap for kind of future action on these dynamic reference points, kind of taking us from theory into something kind of more practical and something we can implement. So, you know, these are basically reference points that can change through time. And I'm not going to try and explain the details to you because I'm the wrong person to do that, but we have a really excellent steering committee that we've formed up of people who think a lot about dynamic reference points and are really excited to help work with Dr. Cronan to plan this workshop. So Jamie is the project lead. She's obviously working closely with Dr. Feeney as the SSC coordinator on this. I think we're pretty close on identifying a venue, and so we've been working out the logistics. We do have some dates. Really, this is building on prior work that's occurred in recent years and trying to operationalize. So you will hear more about the outcomes of this workshop after it's held kind of later in the year. And I will turn it over at this point to Angelia, who's going to talk a little bit about the ecosystem component species evaluation that she is the lead analyst for.
Thanks, Michelle. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, sure. You sound great.
Great. Good afternoon, council members. Angelia Miller with Marist Collaborative, independent consultant for the council, and I will be providing the update for IRA 3.3, which is your ecosystem component species evaluation project. And this project was really born out of the need to potentially use ecosystem component designations in the face of climate-driven changes in distribution, abundance, and productivity. It's looking to establish evaluation and management strategies for ecosystem components in the New England region. And we plan to analyze factors listed in the Magnuson-Stevens Acts and the National Standard Guidelines. We'll also look at environmental drivers and fishery data. And then we will also develop criteria or thresholds that can be used as rationale for designating ecosystem component species within the council's management system. Deliverables of this project include a guidance document or a white paper that will discuss how to quantify the criteria and thresholds that would warrant the designation for any species the council wishes to evaluate, as well as a pilot evaluation for 8 currently managed species, including southern windowpane flounder, Atlantic wolffish, witch flounder, southern New England mid-Atlantic yellowtail flounder, thorny skate, rosette skate, red hake, and offshore hake, as well as 2 unmanaged species, sandlance and cusk. Next slide, please. Oh, one back. There you go. In 2025, we reviewed the use of ecosystem component designations at other fishery management councils, and we selected the set of case study species that I previously referenced based on feedback from plan coordinators and the Climate and Ecosystem Steering Committee. This year, we'll begin evaluating the co-occurrence distributions and food habits of those case study species, as well as their need for conservation and management based on national standard guidelines. We'll continue to seek feedback on the species evaluations and the criteria and metrics that will form the basis of future evaluations at various meetings throughout the year. And finally, we aim to recommend any case study species for designation subject to the results of the evaluation. Then, moving forward into 2027, the council could consider developing and implementing the necessary council action to designate any of the recommended species as part of your council priority setting process. And that is the end of my slides. Michelle, you're welcome to continue forward.
Thank you very much. So the next series of projects are related to governance. So we have a couple that are really kind of closely interrelated and probably could have been described as one project that I'll talk about and I'm the staff lead for. So what we mean by governance here is kind of which different groups and individuals are involved in developing management for a particular resource and kind of what their roles are with respect to each other. And so, you know, we have previously discussed that the need for looking at these issues is that we're seeing range expansions, contractions, shift in distribution for many of our stocks, you know, some more or less extensive than others. And so our current governance frameworks that were developed in many cases decades ago, you know, based on distributions and kind of the ecosystem at that point, may not really be the most useful going forward. And so it feels like it's kind of time to rethink. You know, we also are trying to do this work in the context of kind of just available resources, kind of human, scientific, and kind of within the environment that we're working. And so it feels like a good point to think about kind of the work that we're doing and making sure that we're kind of well-positioned into the future with respect to other organizations that we work with. So this governance, these efforts really build quite a lot on the action menu that came out of the scenario planning initiative. The action menu is a kind of living product that is really owned by the East Coast Coordination Group, but with the support of the East Coast Core team. So the idea is that as the years progress, we take a look at that menu, we think about information such as the State of the Ecosystem Report or other activities and work that we're doing in management, other scientific information that we have, and think about where we're at with the actions and which ones we are kind of ready to bring forward, whether we need to add anything. And so, you know, we've been working through that process for the last couple of years. But there's a couple that are really identified in that action menu that the governance briefing document kind of highlights those specific actions. But the objectives of our project, which are similar but, you know, a little bit distinct from the objectives of the Mid-Atlantic and the South Atlantic projects that are similar, are to think about our advisory body structure, use, and decision-making, and how representative membership may be given the shifts in species distributions. By advisory body there, we mean, you know, our committees, our advisory panels, you know, our plan development teams, other types of committees, you know, that are non-FMP committees, like, you know, Habitat or potentially our SSC, things like that. Just kind of looking across these bodies and thinking about whether we have kind of the right people in the room with the right expertise. And then the second part of that, that 4.2, is really around joint management approaches. The work that we do with our partner organizations, you know, for explicitly joint plans like Monkfish, for plans that are more kind of running in parallel with each other like Herring, or for other plans where we just want engagement from other councils. We have a number of plans where we do engage other, I guess all of our plans really, we do engage other organizations in our decision making to various degrees. You know, do we need to better document what we're doing there? Do we need to kind of revise some of our approaches? Do we need to try and achieve some more consistency across plans? And so we're really working with our other East Coast partners to have those conversations together. And then something specific here is thinking about, you know, are there opportunities to combine fishery management plans, either within our council or working across councils? And thinking about, you know, the benefits of doing that, and also what the costs and challenges would be. So specifically in this case, we've been thinking a lot about kind of how to do our monkfish and skate work together, and whether that's where that's, you know, providing some benefits or where that's proving a little bit challenging. And so we'll continue to do that work under the umbrella of this project to kind of put a finer point on this, and then be able to bring some ideas to the council about kind of ways to move forward, or we, you know, decide to maintain the structure as is. So that's something that we're also working on here. And we really are working quite closely with other organizations so that we can be consistent where we can be. The way we're accomplishing this really is through a workshop series with some work in between those workshops. Some of the other councils have contractor support for the workshops specifically. We've had a lot of support looking at our process through the Holistic Strategic Plan project and their discovery, and so we're taking information from them from that process as well. Eventually, you know, we may end up revising some of our operations documents or our operating procedures document, but that's kind of later after this kind of discovery and workshop series has played out. So the next project is one that we're just in the initial planning stages for now, and we'll really begin digging into this later. It made sense kind of towards the tail end of this governance workshop series. So Jonathan Paras is the staff project lead on this one, which makes sense given his role within the staff. And really what we're trying to do here is update our operating agreement with NOAA Fisheries, different offices there. It is kind of a little bit older at this point, and there's a bunch that's changed in terms of kind of how we're doing our work, and so there's definitely an opportunity to modernize. So, you know, thinking about the terminology in the agreement, the roles for each organization in the agreement, kind of general and more specific, and think about what we need to revise. Want to be bearing in mind updated procedural guidance, like NEPA guidance or ESA guidance, and just our evolving landscape in which we work as we're doing this. So again, this will be, there'll be, you know, obviously a lot of prep work going into this, but we plan a facilitated workshop. Probably this will be into 2027, but we'll really start planning this later in the year. The final project that falls under this governance umbrella is the portfolio analysis project. So thanks to Connor Cosino for providing some of the graphics and the points to make in some of these slides. Any errors are mine and not his. So I'll do my best to explain. We do plan a more detailed update on this analysis for you in April to really get into the details. So this is really just designed to give you a sketch of what it is that this project is and what types of information go into it and what we can expect some of the outcomes to be. Jenny Couture can also answer questions about this. She's the project lead at the staff level and she's coordinating the project team. So the theory behind portfolio, you know, you've heard about this before. I think you're familiar with financial portfolios. The idea is that diversifying is generally kind of better when you have assets that are uncorrelated or negatively correlated. If you have a stock, you can sell that independent of another stock. Fish don't work that way. They interact with each other in the ecosystem. So it's more complex to consider fish as a portfolio than, stocks and bonds and other financial assets. Recognize that in a fisheries context, there's high fixed costs to operate, cost of, permits and vessels and gas, gear, crew, bait, servicing debt. There's a lot of liquidity required to operate. We know that there's a lot of variability in fisheries revenue. If revenue is declining substantially, you could be at risk of not being able to meet your costs. If you have a big upside swing in revenue, that could indicate something about the sustainability of your harvest. But all in all, it seems like a productive model to consider fish stocks as similar to the way you would think about a financial asset. And kind of thinking about the best kind of approach to which species you harvest together in order to kind of optimize revenue and maximize yield. So the objectives for the project are three. I want to think about the interaction between these different harvested species and using a combination of the sort of models and methods that are being developed specific to the portfolio analysis, as well as informed by species distribution models. The work that Julian alluded to earlier that we're using for EFH, because those are joint models, they allow us to understand covariance between species, which is important for creating like realistic scenarios in this portfolio work. Technical interactions are, things like which species are you able to catch with the same gear in the same area, and market interactions, kind of which species are being landed together and kind of pair in a market sense. So the idea is to kind of look historically, how far back they can go kind of depends on the data quality. They have data from the 90s, but we may realistically focus on more recent years when we have kind of all the parts and pieces we need to support the analysis. And think about, what are our present management structures, permitting structures, and what would be kind of an optimal harvest, kind of looking across species. And then the idea is that the outcomes are next steps that the council might take one or more of to consider adjusting permits. So just to kind of get your head into this, and I think we can continue to provide these types of examples, and certainly if we do outreach on this, these are completely fake data, so don't get too hung up on the numbers or the relationship of the species to each other. But imagine you've got three species that kind of one of them has low, these are total revenues, like low total revenue, kind of a medium level of total revenue or a high level of total revenue. Also, and those estimates is also kind of low, medium, or high. And you could have different the theoretical kind of revenue you could realize. That's that black curve. The idea is that you want to be, kind of approaching that curve. You're harvesting. You're at your limits, and you're not kind of losing opportunities that have been allocated to the fishery. You can imagine that if you have, you're kind of way up on the right part of that curve, if you're, focusing just on the highest value species, monkfish, you're able to generate a lot of revenue because monkfish is really high value. You've kind of put all your eggs in that basket, but that's also risky. If you're down in the lower kind of left part of the curve, you have a mixed portfolio where you're harvesting three different species. But because, you know, a couple of those are lower value than the monkfish, your overall revenue is lower, but your risk is also lower. So we can use this analysis with real data, obviously, to kind of think about what's happened in the past and what some of these patterns are between the species and kind of what's causing them. And allow the council to think about the level of risk that you're kind of hoping to assume or avoid, and kind of come up with some strategies for which permits and portfolios, which species might be mixed into a portfolio to better kind of approximate or approach that kind of frontier, which is the black line. So getting back to the project and showing you some real data, one of the things that was worked on this fall was really comparing harvest over recent decades to the ACL or total allowable landings, kind of what the ceiling would be on total harvest. And then when we see, you know, a lot of space between the landings, which is the blue, and the constraint, which is the orange there, kind of the question is why and can we better optimize? And so that's, you know, what we'll be working to identify going forward. So all these constraints have been kind of built into the analytical framework, and then the next step is to kind of begin to dig into the data. Connor and Dr. Brewster have also been working on some, you know, additional diagnostics, thinking about which species are contributing most to risk, and kind of thinking kind of overall how much revenue is being generated per amount of risk. So these are the types of metrics that we can explore and start to think about kind of riskier and less risky species to harvest. So next, they'll be continuing to do this work, looking at these different types of interactions, market, technical, biological, using their analysis. Once Dr. Hake provides them the species distribution model results, they'll integrate those to add some kind of realistic biological interactions to the approach. Be looking at the level of kind of the thinking at the harvester level rather than it's hard to, I think, develop kind of solutions or kind of like concrete ideas for management changes out of this until we dig down into like a gear type or, you know, a specific area that people are fishing. Having just the overall portfolio composition isn't at the regional scale isn't really that useful there. And we will be going out and looking for some feedback from permit holders. We think the window for that is probably after you get the updated in April and then before the SSC sees the analysis in the fall. Okay, this is just to, I think, remind you that you're going to hear from Brett Weedoff tomorrow about the holistic strategic plan, the outcomes of the workshop that was held earlier this month, and kind of where that work is going next and what you can expect to see. So I think everybody in this virtual room is aware, and many of you attended a workshop that was held on the 6th and 7th of January. Hopefully everybody's had a chance to look at the document that Parnon Group provided that articulates the vision statement, the high-level strategic goals, and kind of we're starting to work towards what are some strategies for achieving those goals and what are some performance indicators so we know if we're succeeding or failing. And, you know, I think Brett will certainly talk about the kind of feelings and thoughts coming out of the workshop. Generally, people felt the work was really challenging, but there was some excitement for it, and it seems like it's worthwhile. So you will hear more from Brett tomorrow. And I will hand it over to Dr. Feeney to talk about IRA 6.
All right, thanks. Good afternoon, everybody. I've been asked to coordinate IRA 6, the project, which is on enhancing participatory processes in our council work. There's really two sub-projects here that we're working on as council staff. And the first one is to think through how to better streamline workflows using automation and artificial intelligence tools, as well as improving our public communications via website updates and considering expanding into the world of social media use. So we have two staff teams that are working to develop ideas under these two project initiatives, comprised of staff with far more expertise in social media and automation than myself. So I'm really grateful for the team effort on this project. We've been doing quite a bit of brainstorming, planning, and research during the past year, and moving towards implementing new approaches in this coming year. So I'll first focus on the public communications work that I'm the working group chair of. So thinking through the problem statement that was identified originally for this project, the council provides much information out to the public through one-directional modes, posting documents on our website, press releases that get sent out over email, other email distribution lists. Some of these documents can be hundreds of pages long, as you experienced today. They can be difficult to navigate and really dive into, the take-home points and be user-unfriendly, frankly. So we're trying to think through ways that we can better post materials on our website that's in a more accessible format. We have very highly technical documents that are one-dimensional in nature, and that can create some barriers in communication and understandability to the public that we serve. We recognize that. So we've been focusing on improvements that we can be making to our website within the current overall structure of our website. It's out of scope of this project to do a large scale overhaul of our website. But within the current structure, what can we be doing to make information more accessible? And thinking through taking a thoughtful approach to exploring greater use of social media as a means of communicating with the public. So we've been identifying current challenges with our current website. We've been identifying ways that other councils are using social media, developing ideas for potential solutions, thinking through the pros and cons, caveats, and developing guidelines for any solutions that we implement, and then working through solidifying and implementing solutions. So some of the ideas that we're working on relating to our website improvements, we're taking a look at the landing pages that we have for all of our different fishery management plans. They have all of them have overviews at the top of the landing page, but they vary in length and detail. We would like to find a way to better highlight the current work and ongoing actions, the new information, kind of first and foremost on those pages. When you click on a particular council action, a framework or amendment page, we would like to find a way to better highlight for the public the current status of the action, whether that be putting a timeline there or a checklist of where the council is and the different steps of an action process. We've been looking at some of the ways other councils highlight their actions, the status of actions, to see what might make sense for our council. And we're considering ways to better identify and communicate cross-cutting topics. We have our risk policy, we have this strategic plan that's being developed, habitat impacts all of our FMPs, we have a bunch of climate-related resources that we have on our website, we have omnibus actions that, you know, span all of our FMPs. So we're looking for ways that we can better communicate on these cross-cutting topics, maybe making a dedicated page for cross-cutting themes. We're also thinking through our process for submission of written public comments, not only in for specific hearings or scoping periods, but just the general process for receiving comments prior to a particular council or committee meeting. Sometimes a very large number of comments can come in immediately prior to a meeting. It can be difficult for administrative staff to turn those around and organize them and get them back out to the council. So we're seeing, looking at potentially using a Google form or some other automation tools to help the public submit comments in a way that can be more quickly organized and distributed back out to the council. We're also looking at options for creating topical story maps on our website, considering ways to communicate about these cross-cutting topics or longer-term projects. And then on the social media planning, we're thinking through potential objectives for going into the world of social media. We're thinking about ease of access to council meetings and information. We're thinking about providing more real-time sharing of council news, ways to foster connections with various people and organizations interested in our process, and promoting transparency in the council process. So we've been going through a process this fall to seek input from other councils and the public. We've looked through all of the council websites for and done an inventory of the types of social media presence that they have and some aspects of their social media. We're working on asking staff of other councils through the Council Coordination Committee Communications Work Group for input on the pros and cons of their social media approaches. And we've asked through the IRA project on the Holistic Strategic Plan if the Parning Group could include questions about social media and public communications in the surveys that they'll be sending out to our local public. So you may see questions related to that soon. So thus far, we've been exploring the use of YouTube for potentially posting recordings of meetings, both the audio as well as the screenshot. Currently, we just have audio recordings on our website. Maybe down the road we could get to live streaming, but that would be that's not what we're thinking, at least of it initially for that. We're exploring other social media platforms, kind of the normal range of, you know, the Facebooks, the Twitters, the different platforms like that, for their pros and cons about posting news, photos, infographics, and other items of human interest. We're also thinking carefully about norms for the public's interaction with our social media. And developing standards for decorum that are consistent with the council's decorum standards in our operations handbook and our operations practices and procedures, as well as processes that we could implement within the staff to moderate the content on social media to ensure that it complies with the standards that we develop. Next is the Artificial and Intelligence and Automation Work Group. Julian Garrison is chairing that effort for us. So we're recognizing that successful management is highly data intensive, requires integrating information from a variety of different regions and disciplines and sources. We have complex information that we need to be communicating to the public. And it would be of great help to use more modern tools for visualization, translating information, and communicating. The advancements that are taking place within AI and imaging, we're recognizing can convey information in new and highly visible ways. So we're working on developing guidance on AI and automation, exploring various tools and workflows that we could use and would benefit from AI and automation, and identifying various training opportunities for staff, as this is an area of needed staff development as we go in this direction. Yeah, sorry about that. Okay, so just briefly, for the Luddites, including myself, about what distinguishes AI and automation. You can think of automation as a person setting up the rules and the steps for a computerized process, and then the system performing those repetitive tasks, and that system can only revise its tasks with the human updating the rules and the steps. Artificial intelligence is more on the spectrum of the system simulating human learning and decision making in performing tasks and responding in a more dynamic fashion to new information and refining outputs. And there's kind of a spectrum between those ends based on the degree of human oversight. So you can think of this as like your Outlook inbox. If you set up a rule for, if I get a message from so-and-so, I'm going to put it automatically in this folder or on this topic, that can only change if you go in and change the rule later on the road. If you have artificial intelligence helping you as you move things into folders, it could pick up on your clues and help you move those things into folders and adjust as you make different decisions about your email. Goodness. There we go. So Julian and I last summer attended a helpful training through the University of New Hampshire and Northern Light AI to give an overview of artificial intelligence capabilities and the state of the art. But they also cautioned the participants of this training to take a very thoughtful approach towards merging into the world of AI. And we really liked this TRACE framework that they presented to us for informing our thinking. So the TRACE stands for tracking your processes that you currently have in your organization, observing what you do and identifying bottlenecks to efficiencies. R is for recognizing where you have repetitive tasks, where you're taking a lot of time on things that could benefit from automation. A is for assessing the impact and feasibility of potential automations, identifying any potential risks or downsides. C is for choosing and prioritizing, considering the impact, feasibility, level of importance, degree of impact on your overall objectives. And E is for execute and evaluate, where you do some piloting, of implementing, gathering feedback, and then scaling what you find to be successful. So we're trying to take a measured approach as we go forward here. So as I said, we've been this past year in a discovery phase where we've been attending trainings, identifying various workflows where AI and automation could be useful. We've been exploring, and we're currently using Zoom Workplace for the staff. There's a chat feature, polling, scheduling, sharing news that's improving our efficiencies already. We've been thinking through how to discover and summarize and reference literature for FMP support. Been thinking through, are there better ways to create meeting summaries as well as analyze data and report on data. We will be continuing to seek input from the wider staff on needs and workflows. We're doing pilot exercises on data stream workflows and supporting coordination between the risk policy and different fishery performance reporting ideas. We're compiling and drafting recommendations, and we'll be arranging staff workshops on training. Yep, And that's it for me.
So back to Angelia.
Thanks, Rachel. Thanks, Michelle. Hello again, Angelia Miller, Marist Collaborative. So for the past 30 slides or so, you've received updates on the six IRA initiatives and their nested projects, all of which have the goal to develop and implement actions that will support a shift towards more flexible processes and procedures for the long term. Technical staff have acknowledged the need to align those projects so as not to add additional processes or products to what is already, as Rachel mentioned, a data-intensive system. So there's a need to effectively use those data sources, efficiently assemble data products, and build workflows that are applicable across FMPs. Through this process mapping effort, staff leads from IRA 1, IRA 3.1, and IRA 6 are working to develop a coordinated and integrated product that fulfills multiple uses within the council's decision-making and apply this thinking across other workflows and documents as appropriate. And as we just heard from Dr. Feeney, the staff work group for the AI and automation efforts used the TRACE framework in their discovery phase. And on the next slide, if we use that same framework and strip the council process of its complexities and nuances, one process that remains is the identification of problems that necessitate a regulatory action, potential solutions that cycle through PDT, AP, committee, and council meetings until the action is ready for submission and rulemaking. And with each iteration, there's the potential of increasing the number of documents or the number of pages within a document that supports your decision making. And at the center, supporting this cycle is your technical staff, who sometimes create the same document or derivations of that document year after year. Next slide. Mr. Applegate recognized that one of those documents was the annual monitoring report, which included utilization trends, quota monitoring, and survey biomass trends. Last year, he automated the generation of this report. In doing so, and to meet the needs of IRA 3.1, he also included information that would support the application of the new RESC policy in its beta phase. This prototype was presented at your recent December council meeting. At the same time, the alpha phase of the RISC policy launched the use of the revised RISC policy matrices, which included similar information as well as information regarding stock assessments and climate vulnerability. Last year, matrices were drafted and supported council actions for monkfish, skates, scallops, and groundfish. Taking a page out of the RISC policy working group book, we'll coin this our prototype phase. Moving into 2026 and into this effort, our transition phase, staff leads came together and also recognized that the human community section of the affected environment within an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement sometimes contains similar categories of information. The goal is now to build upon the system that Mr. Applegate used in his prototype report that merges these documents into one integrated report that fulfills Magnuson and NEPA constraints and risk policy and fishery information needs for the council, and that could be standalone and standardized across FMPs. Next slide. All that being said, and putting it on a timeline, in 2025, we had our discovery and prototype phase, which happened in parallel, but not necessarily jointly. Now, moving into 2026, staff are leading the efforts through the transition phase, which will continue to outline and plan this integrated report, build the supporting system and automation processes, and test the flexibility of the report within a set of FMPs and actions. In 2027, we aim to fully implement this workflow into the regulatory action process and across FMPs. And finally, in 2028 and beyond, we'll scale this as appropriate to other reports or documents, which could be identified based on outcomes from IRA 6.1. We'll also note that we will also be soliciting feedback throughout these next transition and implementation phases within various intervals in terms of the products and their integration. And I believe that's my last slide, Michelle.
Thank you. So I'll just kind of wrap up with a few slides here and talk about kind of what's next in terms of some of the conversations we'll have. So I hopefully you have an appreciation for the kind of quite large portfolio of interrelated work that we're doing, that there are a lot of connections between these projects that we're trying to make, hopefully effectively. Most of the contracting that we're going to be doing here is kind of well underway and in process. We still have a couple of needs for the groundfish management transition project, and as well as the operations agreement, regional operations agreement updates. That'll happen later this year. We're, you know, making good progress towards all the staff work, the ecosystem information integration, and then the work that Rachel was just talking about in terms of the kind of public communication and automation approaches. We kind of are envisioning this year, you know, we've got a bunch of meetings that are going to be happening kind of within our council and for our own projects, and then coordinating across organizations as well. So we're actively planning, in particular, some joint governance workshops, as well as that SSC workshop that I spoke about. And as we move forward, we're going to really try and target the outreach and the presentations we give and the information that we ask back from either from the council or from other specific groups, so that we can kind of keep moving on these projects, but get the feedback that we need to ultimately make them kind of useful to support council decision making. So we've got a couple of opportunities for checking in during 2026. You know, we do have some kind of flexibility with many of these, but, you know, because some of these are involving our kind of partners that we're contracting with, and the contracts, you know, in some cases are wrapping up, we want to do want to bear that in mind. So the project that Dr. Curl talked to you about, looking at simulation testing ABC control rules integrated with the new risk policy, you'll be hearing about that a bit in April. We're also going to present that to the SSC a little bit before that in March. We'll see if it makes sense for the Climate and Ecosystem Steering Committee to get some updates on that, but definitely you've talked about that steering committee supporting communication of the risk policy, and so that's something that we're planning for at some point in the not too distant future. We'll think about kind of depending on the timeline for the groundfish management approaches when to check back in with the council. Certainly, as I mentioned, you know, we'll want to talk to the groundfish committee. On the ecosystem information front, the ecosystem component species framework and the pilot results that Angelia spoke about, we plan to present those to you in June to kind of give you an initial understanding of the framework and kind of the outcomes from the pilot work. We expect to have, I think, the final report on the Dynamic Reference Points SSC workshop in July, and so you'll hear about that at the council meeting after that, potentially in September. The SSC obviously will be working on that before then, and we have a number of places where the Climate and Ecosystem Steering Committee will engage in these types of projects. We'll share the portfolio analysis results with you in April, potentially also later this year, and do some work to think about follow-up actions for our council and also working across the councils and the commission as needed, probably as early as the December meeting and maybe into the future as well. The holistic strategic plan we'll talk about tomorrow, but you'll see a draft version of that plan in April, and we'll talk about a final plan in June. And then we will do, we're planning an additional update on the work that Rachel spoke about, participatory processes at the April meeting. But as you know, noted, we'll kind of continue to seek feedback from you where we need to, and from other groups as needed, as we build these tools out into the future. And as Angelia noted, I think as we start having products that kind of meet the goals of the process mapping, you'll be seeing those kind of as examples for different work, and we'll kind of take feedback through that process or maybe more directed if we need to. We do have a couple opportunities that are really specific around public engagement, in addition to kind of through our own council meetings and potentially committee and other meetings of other council bodies. We definitely want to do some outreach on the portfolio analysis work and kind of share what we're seeing and help kind of ground truth the understanding of the project team and the patterns that they're seeing, and get some feedback from folks that are involved in those fisheries, kind of what they're seeing and why we might be seeing some of these patterns and what some of the solutions might be. Obviously, the ground fish management transition project is very much about kind of taking the pulse of the industry and the kind of broader public who are interested in ground fish management, and developing some solutions there. We do, of course, have public engagement through our public meetings. And then, you know, as I noted, we'll look for feedback on some of our integrated products and our public communication projects, you know, in kind of a more organic way, I think, over time. So that's what we have. I think we're going to pause at this point if people have questions on these projects. Hold your strategic plan questions till tomorrow, and then hold your IRA 1 questions for Dr. Kerr.
Thank you, Rachel, Michelle, and Angelia. That was quite a bit. Now we see all these IRA projects together in one rather long presentation, because there's actually a lot of work there, and it's a lot of good work that I think the staff is moving forward on with the contractor and a lot of the oversight team. So there's a lot of good work going on. Wish we had this to do over again when we thought about priorities in December, but you know, we are where we are. So with that, I would open it up to the council. Any questions on the numerous IRA projects that have been presented and where they are to date? Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And wow, that's a lot of work. Really appreciate the thorough presentation and updates that you guys just provided. First, very easy, low-hanging fruit is the ecosystem components and which flounder I noticed was mentioned in that list. I assume that's, we talked about that as a council when it came out of one of the recommendations from, I believe it was one of the working groups or Science Center. And I think I was told that that was not going to, you know, make it into the final round. So I was a little confused why I saw that. Can anyone explain why that is still being included as an ecosystem component?
I believe that's to you, Leah.
Yeah, I'll take that one. Thanks, Jackie. Yeah, so we're including which flounder sort of as not necessarily because we want to designate it as an ecosystem component, but because we know for a fact that it could not be designated an ecosystem component based off of the feedback that was received during that working group on the Climate and Ecosystem Steering Committee meeting. So we're using it more as a control for the evaluation and to kind of create a robust evaluation. So the ones that we might fall more into the ecosystem component designation, if those results come back as entirely different than which flounder, which we know should not be one, then maybe that is further rationale that those species should be considered for designation. And then two, there was also some motivation to align the species in this work with the species in the IRA 1 for the simulation testing for ground fish harvest control rules, where they're using witch flounder as a focal species. And Dr. Kerr will touch on that later. And then also to align it with the EFH work that was previously presented by Mr. Garrison, where a species distribution map will be created this year for witch flounder. So in the spirit of project mapping, it's also, or process mapping, it's also to align with some of the other work that is ongoing in the council.
Okay, so it's helpful to know it's being used as a control, not as a potential candidate, but to look at what other stocks may be a candidate.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation. And then with the portfolio project, I know there's that we're looking at some of the slides, Michelle, that you had shown were based on individual species or stocks. When I think of a portfolio, I think of like in groundfish, I think of, you know, we have multi-species permits. that have MRIs. You know, we have a currency, a currency that's currently recognized in the fishery that's not, you know, species or stock specific. So just curious how that's going to be looped into the analysis.
Yeah, thanks for the question. That's a good one. I think we can make sure to have, whether it's Connor or Lauren, give this presentation in April, cover this. As I understand it, they can build any kind of constraints that are needed into the analytical framework. So, you know, we currently have constraints about kind of total, the ceiling for landings at the stock level. I think you could also build in constraints that, you know, stocks are related to each other or captured together, that, you know, permits for certain species are linked and can't be separated out if you were to kind of think of ways to modify the system. So you could allow, you know, splitting off of some permits and kind of require the permits for other species, you know, that they are permitted as a group. So I'm not sure of all the details, and I think we can kind of put that again as a discussion point to make sure that it's covered when we next present this. But I think we can kind of build in the realistic constraints in the system into the model.
Okay, thank you. And then were you guys looking for feedback today on next steps for the groundfish management plan transition and the IRA project, or is that just something that you're looking for feedback in the near future?
So I think at a high level, we just want to really confirm that the council's comfortable broadening the scope of that. And then we'll have some from just cod to like a kind of a bigger picture on the groundfish fishery overall. And then we'll have to follow up and have more detailed conversations about the exact kind of scope of what we're looking to elicit from those meetings that we would hold.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Actually, I just want to make a comment more towards the portfolio analysis. I get what you're trying to do, trying to map catch species interactions. I don't know how you're going to do it, but I would be curious, and I will be paying attention of how you look at catch correlations, particularly under changing management streams over the years, whether it was changing tax or, you know, ACLs, also what people had for permits, what they were and were not allowed to land. So that's an interesting one, but I see there's some little tough areas that you're going to have to navigate through. So I'll definitely be paying attention to that one for sure.
Yeah. If I could, I think one of the reasons to do some outreach on this is to make sure that, like, if there's a specific reason why there's patterns in the data that people are going to be aware of that maybe at the analyst level and they're looking big picture, they may not kind of have an appreciation for. But yeah, I mean, we've built obviously a very complex system and trying to understand the patterns in that. And, you know, some of the, even just looking at the differences between the limits and what was realized, every species is going to have a slightly different reason for why there's a gap between those. So yeah, there's going to need to be a kind of a lot of thoughtful engagement with the data to understand what we're seeing.
Cool. Thank you. I did see Mr. Smith, your hand went up. I don't know if you lost your bars or your question is all set.
I know, Dan, thanks for that. I had the same question that Jackie had regarding why gray sole was still being included on the ecosystem component analysis list. And Leah did a great job of explaining why. So I'm all set.
Thank you. Mr. Perenak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. I've had some connectivity issues here during the end of this presentation. So just a few questions and just a one comment. I'm going to make them all together in the event I get disconnected. On the IRA slide, the groundfish slide, there's the last bullet. I would also recommend that it include looking at recreational mode management as a different mode management approach. An IRA slide 3.1, I have a question about is dynamic environmental factors. Does that include predator prey relationships? And then in slide 3.3, there was a discussion about ecosystem and forage. I was curious of the forage fish that had been selected, and it did note sand lance, but I was curious of why cusk was included. So those are my questions and comments, and I'll stand by and hopefully we'll stay connected. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. A point taken about the recreational mode management, and we can put that in our list of possibilities. We've definitely looked at the food web interactions. We've assembled a lot of information in that context for our EFH work, and so we have the opportunity to bring that to bear on kind of more general ecosystem approaches to management, which is envisioned in Project 3.1. And then in terms of the ecosystem components, we're thinking that we would look at that as well. Maybe if, I don't know if Angelia, you want to add anything about kind of specifically what we're thinking.
All right, Michelle, could you repeat, Ed, about
the use of forage information diets in the ecosystem component evaluation? The idea that would be a part of a factor in that evaluation.
Yes, yeah. In the ecosystem component project, we're including prey habits and kind of a food web analysis to see how the case study species we selected, how they fit within the different trophic levels and their importance within the ecosystem.
Thanks.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. We're going to kick it over to Dr. Kerr. If you are ready for your presentation, so you can kind of walk through the work that UMaine has been doing in related to, I believe, IRA Project 1. Yep. Whenever you're ready, Dr. Kerr.
Yeah, great. You can hear me okay?
Sure can.
Okay, great. I'll just wait for the slides to come up and... Great. So today I'm going to talk to you about the work we're doing evaluating the council's new risk policy in the context of our ABC control roles. And I just want to acknowledge the team here, including myself at the University of Maine. We have Dr. Roger Brothers and Dr. Alex Schneider working on this project. Next, please. And just to give you an overview of the project goals and objectives, we're focused on evaluating the performance of our council's new risk policy and how it might integrate with our ABC control rules. Our first objective of the project has been to evaluate the council's updated risk policy and demonstrate factor scoring and potential approaches to integrating the risk policy with ABC control rules. Objective two was to develop a management strategy evaluation framework to evaluate the performance of the risk policy in the context of our brownfish ABC control rules. And then objective three is to work with our council project oversight team and co-develop the priorities and alternative scenarios for testing in an MSC framework and then conduct that simulation testing. Next, please. So I just want to introduce you to our project oversight team. This is a council-appointed team, including Robin Freedy, who's our staff liaison and contract lead. We have Jonathan Perez, who's council staff and also the liaison or lead council lead on the risk policy working group. Gareth Lawson at the Conservation Law Foundation, SSC member and risk policy working group member. And Angelia Miller, who's a contractor and part of the Marist Collaborative. This group is, we're interacting with this group through project team meetings, and they are helping us to, through their advice on project goals and priorities and methods, and helping facilitate our interactions with other council groups and stakeholders. Next, please. So as you know, the council implemented a new risk policy concept in 2025 that aims to more explicitly define the level of risk tolerance associated with our management decisions, including the setting of catch advice. It's designed to incorporate a variety of factors that characterize both biological and socioeconomic conditions of stocks and fisheries, and ultimately, can enable us to have a quantitative determination of risk tolerance on a stock-by-stock basis. The latest iteration of the risk policy is shown here and is comprised of five factors that are scored according to the rubric that's shown here, and associated data sources that are used to score each factor for a stock. The factors are then weighted by the council based on the relative importance they deem for each factor. And the scores and weightings are combined to inform a risk level, essentially informing how risky or potentially precautionary we might want to be in making a decision, such as catch advice. Next slide, please. So exactly how the risk policy will integrate with our current council's ABC control rules is under development. There are a lot of different ways forward here. But the risk policy working group has suggested that the quantitative output of the revised risk policy could be directly integrated into our ABC control rules, such that they might inform the precautionary buffer between, for instance, an OFL and an ABC, and allow this buffer to be more dynamic than under our current control rules, and perhaps more responsive to a broader set of criteria, such as, you know, this risk policy has a novel inclusion of climate impacts and socioeconomic impacts associated with the commercial and recreational fisheries. The integration of the risk policy also has the potential for ABCs that could be closer to the OFL or farther from the OFL than we currently see in our ABC control rules. And those decisions on that might lead to more fishing opportunities for some stocks and perhaps faster rebuilding for others. Additionally, integrating the risk policy would provide for more objective criteria and perhaps less ad hoc decision-making about when we might want to be more or less precautionary for a particular stock. Next, please. So the first step in our work was a demonstration of how we might expect the risk policy to perform, and kind of think of this as our group kind of stress testing the performance of the details kind of underlying the rubric for how you would score the identified risk factors. So we conducted a demonstration of factor scoring for 22 groundfish stocks using I'll note we used the former risk policy rubric that was available during the summer to fall when this work was completed. So it did include a couple different factors, which are shown in the figure. Each header there represents a factor that we scored at the time. And I will note at the time, the fishery factors weren't defined, the rubrics weren't defined, so those are not scored. But this demonstration allowed us to identify some places that might need to be iterated on and developed further to have clear definition and clear guidance on scoring risk factors as we move forward in the risk policy. Next slide, please. So ultimately, the individual factor scores are weighted by the council weightings and then summed to produce a quantity that is referred to as a z-score, which is on the bottom axis of the graph you see in the figure here. The z-score informs where a stock might fall on this curve or logistic function that you see in the figure there, and this is going to relate to where it falls with respect to different risk levels. So we've kind of imposed some bandings here to kind of just guide your eye as to where some example focal stocks landed through the scoring and weighting process, such as, for example, which flounder is an example of a stock that fell on the end of having a low risk tolerance through this exercise. So this is a stock in a rebuilding plan, and this score, this demonstration would suggest you might want to be more precautionary. Whereas a stock like Gulf of Maine Haddock fell on the end of a high risk tolerance, that green band it falls into. This is a stock that's not overfished. There's no overfishing. So this might be a stock under this demonstration that would suggest you'd have a higher risk tolerance and you might be able to be more, take on more risk in your decision making on it. Next slide, please. So the next step in this project is the work doing simulation testing. We're using a management strategy evaluation framework, essentially building a simulation modeling framework that emulates the entire fisheries management process and can be used to compare the expected performance of alternative management procedures. So we're emulating selected fishery resources and their dynamics, and then emulating data collection, a stock assessment, and a harvest control rule being an ABC control rule being applied, and what that corresponding ABC might look like coming out of that, and then a virtual fishery harvests that the resource, and that harvest is impacts, has that removals back on consequences back on the fishery resource. So this is an expansion of the existing framework we've used to examine some other alternative questions around brown fish management procedures in the region. Next slide. As I mentioned before, there's a lot of different ways we might consider integrating the output of the risk policy directly into ABC control rules. In our simulations work, we're starting by exploring two risk integrated approaches. One we call the dynamic buffer, and the other a tiered control rule. And these are two ways to translate the risk tolerance level that comes out of the risk policy into a proportion of FMSY that would be used to define the ABC. So when you think about our standard ground fish control rules, where if you're not overfished, there's no overfishing, you applying 75% ABC, this would be sort of replacing those standard rules. In the case of the dynamic rule on the left, the dynamic buffer would use a linear relationship and kind of directly take the output of the risk policy, and wherever you fell on that, you would inform a proportion of the FMSY to use to define your ABC. Whereas the tiered rule, you would use the output of the risk policy to define a tier that you would fall into. So on the left-hand side, there'd be a lot of movement perhaps in the proportion of FMSY that you would use to define ABC. On the right-hand side in the tiered approach, you would kind of fall into a bucket. And if you were at the high end, you might, the high risk tolerance end, you might be, defining your FMSY at 80% of, you might be defining your ABC at something like 80% of FMSY, and the low end, maybe at 60%. There's a lot of decisions to make in that. That's just one example. Next slide. So we're working with, recently met with the project oversight team to discuss the simulation plan, which right now consists of focusing on three focal stocks, Gulf of Maine haddock, Western Gulf Maine cod, and witch flounder. So we wanted to have two analytical stocks at kind of different ends of the spectrum in terms of stock status, and then witch flounder, which is an example of a stock that uses empirical approaches in the assessment and decision role for catch advice. We're going to simulate three ABC control rules, our status quo ABC control rules for ground fish, and these two options for risk policy integrated rules, the dynamic buffer and the tiered approach. We're going to use two approaches to weighting the factors in the risk policy when we do this. We're going to use uniform weighting where everything is weighted the same, and then use your council derived weightings that were derived from that exercise that was done maybe about a year ago. It's just an example of what a different weighting would look like. There are definitely some additional options we might explore here as we get into the simulations. There are certainly alternative ways to integrate the risk policy into ABC control rules, and we are continuing to iterate and work closely with the risk policy working group as they really refine the final version. We want to kind of get as close to using the final version of the risk policy as possible in the simulation plan. And then we're going to evaluate the performance of our status quo ABC control rules against these risk policy integrated control rules through a variety of different performance metrics to try to show the different ways they might have benefits or kind of non-intuitive responses we might not have foreseen. Next slide. So throughout this process, we're working closely to coordinate with other council processes. So we're working closely with our project oversight team, who's helping us keep pace with other processes. And this, of course, includes our council staff and SSC member representatives. We're working closely and have presented several times to the risk policy working group and are really tracking closely the development of the risk policy so we can best emulate that in the simulation testing we're doing. And then we've met with the Groundfish Committee and are planning to meet with them again to really get their feedback as we do the simulation testing that will hopefully inform the ABC control rule revision process going forward. So happy to take any questions on what I've overviewed for you today. And we will definitely be in front of the council in the future as we get results to share back further on in the project. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kerr. Any questions, comments from the council? Let's focus on the presentation, Dr. Kerr, and the work that they're doing and any questions more related to risk policy we could probably take up tomorrow when we go through risk policy. So I'll give it to the council. Questions, comments on the presentation? Seeing none, thank you, Dr. Kerr. We do look forward to your continuation work and your integration as we work through risk policy and your project on the RRA1. With that, I have no more things on my agenda for today. Before y'all, I call adjournment today, I just want everyone to remind, could we all join in a little early tomorrow, maybe like 8:50? It seems like we were a little out of our Zoom processes, and we just want to make sure everyone has their mute, unmute, and the audio settings all set out. So tomorrow morning, 8:50, love to see you all on the webinar. With that, I will call it a day. Thank you.
Yeah, have a good night. I think I figured it out.
Thank you, Andy.
God, it was a struggle, but thanks to Jonathan and Ted, I got things done.
We'll hold you to that tomorrow.
All right, very good, Dan. Take care.
Yep.